When you're trading options, Fidelity has just what you need with straightforward but powerful tools to help you select a strategy and execute your ideas. And they offer a wide range of information and insights to help simplify your trading experience. Have a question? Ask it live during their small classes and coaching sessions. Need information? Check out their educational videos, articles, and webinars. See why it's easy to trade options your way at Fidelity. Start now at fidelity.com/options. Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risks. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of Characteristics and Risks of Standardized Options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request. Tuesday, the 12th of March, 1 p.m. on the East Coast. A very exciting day for a lot of different reasons. Guy Adami, Dan Nathan, just the two of us here on Market Call. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing great, Guy Adami.
Let's go right to the rundown because I'm telling you, today has the earmarks of one of those days. It reminds me a little bit of last Friday. Hot inflation data, absolutely. We'll talk about that. A chip stock catch-up play for sure. We have a bullish trade idea in the gold miners, and I got to tell you something. They've underperformed. We actually think they're going to start to play a little catch-up like that chip trade, Dan.
Yeah, we're going to do a couple things in the chips. It's going to be a little chips and dip, Guy. We're going to look at NVIDIA. We're going to look at, you know, listen, I think what you're doing right now, you've done this many times before. You usually have a good track record in this. When you want to, what, footnote something, bookmark something, a day in the market, something that can happen a little bit. Friday was all about the NVIDIA reversal. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk a little bit about NVIDIA, if you've been long this, and how you might look to protect this, offering up some future gains, but protection to the downside using options to do that. And then maybe a catch-up trade. We're going to look at Intel a little bit because next week, NVIDIA has this kind of GeForce Day. It's a user conference. You're going to have an investor update. Lots of investors are going to get geeked up about it. But right now, what investors are really hot about, Guy, is hot inflation data.
Yeah, it's interesting. Again, we play this game all the time, but let's look at our slide because, you know, I looked at this inflation data that came out this morning. I'm like, gee whiz, that's sort of hot. The market's not going to like this. And
well, the initial reaction was to sell it.
Yeah. But, you know, the bond market, to me, the bond market is a true arbiter of what's going on. Yes. And obviously, we'll talk about yields in a second, but you saw yields go up. I don't want to say a dramatic way, but you see yields moving back up. I think we're about 415 or so here in the 10-year. So, you know, I looked at all this data and I'm saying to myself, you know, this is a couple months in a row now where you're starting to see a reacceleration of inflation. We've talked about this for a while. Now, I thought that would happen late last year, and it's proven to be somewhat correct. The market is clearly not keying on it yet. But this is something you absolutely have to watch, Dan.
You know, Guy, you and I, we're not these kind of lone voices out there. Our friend Doug Gass over there at Real Money, he runs Seabreeze Capital. He's also talking about these dislocations between the bond market and the equity market. And it's funny, like, listen, this stuff can go against you for a while. It can go against the kind of common narrative in the markets. But sooner or later, when enough folks are just start talking about this and really try to put their finger on why that might be happening, you know what I mean? Listen, I don't think the move from 408 in the 10-year to 415 off of hot inflation data, that's not saying anything to me right yet, Guy. I mean, like, especially when you think of some of the volatility that we have seen in the 10-year yield over the last few months, you know what I mean? Like, this is not like one of those ones we're ready to bookmark, but we are ready to bookmark what might be happening in the equity market that might be preceding a big rate.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying there. It's not, I don't want to make a huge deal out of it without question. Although I will tell you, I think this has made the Fed's job a little bit more difficult, but you know, it's interesting. Peter Buchvar, who's been on this show a few times, he's obviously been on the Tape podcast. The tweet that he put out earlier today, it makes a lot of sense, and I think it will resonate with our audience. If you don't eat, drink, drive, and happen to live in a tent and take out other higher costs you don't like, such as insurance, then there's little or no inflation. And that's true. That's why one of the reasons I think people are so frustrated with what's going on. You know, they see the market ripping every day. yet they understand what they're dealing with in their day-to-day lives. And I think Peter sort of hit the nail on the head.
Well, listen, you know, it's interesting. Obviously, in an election year, we're going to see both presidential candidates hitting this topic. I think the current administration is obviously very focused on a narrative that means whatever they're doing to help bring inflation down. And I think that's obviously a good thing. And then on the flip side of that, right, you'll have somebody talking about how bad it is for America. So no one feels good about inflation. And I guess from an investor standpoint, right, through the lens that we look at this through, you know, it's like, listen, man, you know, we just had, and you've been talking about pesky and persistent inflation for a very long time. When you start to see the firming up of this data after it's come a long ways from its highs, what, a year or year and a half ago or so.
This June will be 2 years, if you think about that, please.
So you have to have your antennas up, at least from a market perspective, of what would the reaction would be, because everything that has happened really since that explosion, let's pull up the S&P 500 chart here for a second. We have since that breakout, right? You see it late last year. It's been predicated on the fact that inflation's coming down, that rates are likely to come down, but a lot has changed. If inflation has actually firmed up at low levels here, we just saw last Friday that unemployment rate tick up to 3.9%. And if we see the push out of rate cuts, how is the S&P holding that line, guys?
Yeah, certain things are starting to happen in a manner with which I thought they would happen. You mentioned the unemployment rate ticking up to 3.9%. Again, if you go back and look, the revisions, 10 of the last 12 months, the jobs number's been revised lower in a meaningful way. And I think at some point that manifests itself in the unemployment rate. We're starting to see that. And again, inflation, yes, the rate is lower than it was, but it's, again, you know, inflation is just going up less fast than it was. And again, that's why people, I think, are so, I don't know, concerned or so emotional about the economy vis-a-vis the stock market. Now, look at the S&P 500, to your point. We've drawn this trend line now for quite some time. It continues to hold this trend line. But again, that moving average is coming into play right with those previous highs and that breakout level. And I do think, in my opinion, if we violate and close through this line to the downside, you're going to see a pretty precipitous drop. Now, we mentioned today, because if these reversals that I'm starting to see continue, this coupled with what we saw on Friday become a pretty interesting couple days to bookmark and look back upon.
Yeah, while we're on bookmarking, I think it was Peter Buchvar who highlighted the fact that back in July when the S&P was that at its then high, I think it was above like 11 or so percent above its 200-day moving average. Well, look where that 200-day moving average has gotten. Yep. And it's about 11 or 12% above that. Let's look at the day chart here, just to what you're speaking about here, because I think both you and I were a bit perplexed earlier in the session here why the market it would be ripping off of that. So we're coming off here a little bit. Let's just keep an eye on that. Let's see how we close. Let's look at the 10-year yield for a second here, Guy, because I think you and I have slightly different views here. I think equities can come in with yields not going much higher, even in the face of that data, the inflation data that would suggest pushing out rate cuts. And one of the reasons might be a weaker economy, which I think you suggest is not, you know, that is in the offing, especially when you start to consider the fact that where consumer credit is, where, you know, like default rates, where the unemployment ticking up, all those sorts of things. So maybe we don't focus much on yields. Maybe that won't be the driver for equity markets. It might be euphoric, or participation in the AI trade, valuations are getting stretched, a lot of stuff on the consumer, inflation kind of picking up a little bit, and then back to unemployment.
I think, listen, great point. The AI trade clearly is divorced itself from any impact that rates will have. I think higher rates, lower rates doesn't seem to necessarily matter for those trades, which I understand to a point. I do think we differ on the rates, and I think there's a very good chance that you're correct that yields will go lower here. The reasons why I think yields are going to be, you know, it's again going higher from these levels is because all the treasury auctions that need to happen from now effectively to the end of the year, some $9.5-10 trillion worth of paper basically needs to be priced. And again, I'm not suggesting they won't be able to do that. That's not my point at all. But my point is it's going to require a higher rate of interest to get the participation that those auctions need, which again is bond unfriendly, is rates going higher very friendly. That's my view. I'll stick with it. And again, the inflation bugaboo continues to be out there. So on the one hand, you have forces that theoretically should push rates lower. On the flip side, you have forces that should push rates higher. which is one of the reasons why the bond market is having a difficult time figuring this out as well.
Yeah. So another thing, you and I have had a difficult time figuring out that, you know, mega cap tech stocks, obviously largely, you know, pinning on this AI, generative AI trade, you know, the biggest components, Microsoft, Nvidia is now the third largest holding in the NASDAQ 100. We look at it through the lens of the QQQ a little bit. Interesting, Apple, the number two, has no gen AI play and obviously has ceded that number one market cap position to Microsoft a little bit. But this index is interesting to me, Guy. We talked about the concentration. Those top seven names make up nearly 50% of the weight or so. And we can draw the same trend line that we drew in the S&P chart. But look at when you draw a trend channel. If this thing were to hold this line, you could see this thing up another 5% or so before it feels a little bit extended. And, you know, I wanted to just kind of do this little exercise here because I don't know if you know that we have a holiday shortened month here, Guy. The last trading day of the month is going to, I think it's Good Friday. Yeah. So that's March 29th. So March 28th, a Thursday, is the last day of the month. It's the last day of the quarter. I think by all means, you know, people have been, you know, a bit surprised about the strength. Right now, the S&P 500 is up about 8% or so on the year. The NASDAQ 100, it's actually trailing a little bit. That's not something we've seen
It's pretty unbelievable, right? That we're actually, but with your point is well taken. For the first time in a while, you're actually starting to see, I don't know, S&P. Not going to say it because it's
broadening out. Do you mean broadening out?
Broadening out.
Oh,
yeah. And that's that's a healthy thing. Okay, and to your point about this channel, without question, I mean, the lines, as Carter will say, they draw themselves. The upper end of this channel, by definition, with each passing day, gets higher and higher. So the levels of potential that we get to on the upside with each passing day gets a bit higher. I still look at this and say, you know what? We're dangerously close to violating that trend line in the same way we're dangerously close to violating the S&P trend line. That's something to watch. And again, the standard deviations away from the moving average, which historically has been mean reverting for markets, is now at levels that, you know, are, in a word, unhealthy, if that is a single word.
Yeah. So people ask me all the time, Guy, like, you know, we talk about implied movement between now and some sort of period. And so I just thought it was interesting because between now and quarter end, you know that you have a lot of investors who like maybe to paint the tape, a little window dressing, there's rebalances, you know, people kind of solve toward what a period might look like from a return standpoint. So I want to kind of look at the implied move in the QQQ because I think that's kind of driving the train right now. We spent some time on the S&P 500, but really, what this index does, in my opinion, is going to be the thing that kind of drives the broader market, which to me, that kind of relative underperformance over this period of time is kind of interesting. So if I look out to the end of the month, the end of the quarter, if I want to figure out what the implied movement in the QQQ, at least in the options market, is, I can look at the money straddle. I can look at, let's say, the 442 strike straddle on March 28th expiration. I'm taking the call premium of the 442 and I'm taking the put premium at 442, they're each about $6.50. If I put that together, the straddle is $13. Mm-hmm. I divide by the strike, which is 442, that gets me to about 3%. So the options market in the QQQ using the at-the-money straddle in the March 28th, you know, weekly expiration is suggesting that it could move $13 in either direction between now and March 28th, or about 3%. Guy, I look at that. There's the 1 year chart. You know, at, you know, 3%, it might sound like a lot on an index that's up 7.5%. That is like nothing, especially when you consider the potential movements of some of the largest drivers, like we saw on Friday, like an Nvidia or something.
That could be a 2 day reconciliation. I mean, that could happen over the course of 2.5 or 3 trading days without question. And people say, really? Well, the market would price that in. And not necessarily. Sometimes the market doesn't necessarily price in some of the inaccuracies or some of the potential out there. And that's a function of, again, people driving down volatility because that's been the right thing to do. So as volatility gets driven down by a number of different forces, and maybe we'll talk about it on another show, you have opportunities like this to put something on that actually makes a lot of sense in the quarter.
Well, and again, so if you're buying a straddle, and it's not a trade that we often, you know, like we'll detail, we use it actually to kind of give you the implied movement. The flip side of that is, like, let's just say you want to define your risk. You're bullish here. You think the QQQ could rally to the upper end of that channel that we just showed you. $6.50 for that at the money call in March 28th, that's 1.5%. So that's pretty cheap. The flip side, let's say you have a portfolio that looks a lot like the QQQ and you want near-term protection because days like Friday kind of scared you a little bit about how things could start to snowball. The at-the-money put, $6.50 or about 1.5%. So that's one of the reasons why we price this stuff out. That's why we think about it through the lens of the options market and how to extrapolate that to some of your holdings in your portfolio.
Sometimes dislocations provide opportunity. But before we get to a couple of the trades, especially that GDX trade that I'm sort of excited about, we have to have a little word from our sponsor here.
Trading options might be new for you, or maybe you've been doing it for a while. Either way, Fidelity is your go-to source for clear and relevant information about trading options. For example, ask Fidelity professionals questions during their live small classes and coaching sessions and learn more with educational videos, articles, and webinars. Plus, with Fidelity's straightforward tools and technology, you'll find it easier than ever to trade options your way. See what's waiting for you at fidelity.com/options.
Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risks. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of Characteristics and Risks of Standardized Options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request.
Listen, I've been a Fidelity customer for probably like 20 years. I've used their Active Trader Pro, and it is a it is literally about as good as pro trading platform than you will find. And you and I have been using trading platforms, pro trading platforms, for an awful long time. So we're really happy to have them on board.
Gold standard. I mean, without question. Yeah. You know, so we are excited. But let's get into some of these trades.
All right, so let's look at this. So we're talking about, you know, obviously NVIDIA next week has this GeForce thing, and a lot of folks are going to get focused on that. And Friday's, you know, reversal is pretty interesting. The fact that the stock is up 4.5% as we speak right now is pretty interesting. It just seems like people want to come back to the names that have worked. Let's look at the SMH here, the ETF that tracks the semiconductor index. We have the weightings there. You see that NVIDIA now is, what is that?
It's 27.5%.
So you see,
it's remarkable.
So it's driving the train here. This is a vehicle that you and I will continue to trade on Market Call. And we've tried to, you know, pick our spots here, both long and short, short of late a little bit. It's getting a bit of a extension. Talk to me about, you know, on a day like today, you know, you and I were sitting on the set of Fast Money last night watching Lisa Su, the CEO of AMD, with John Ford on the prior show. And we were both remarking, she's just, I said on our show, you've said it probably 100 times in the last 5 years, during her tenure, okay, she took over as CEO, stock was $3.
No,
I straight into it. You have said 100 times. Yeah. What a pro she is. And when you listen to her, she's sober. Like, she's talking about the TAM. She's talking about this environment. Are you surprised the stock is only up 1% today?
Yes and no. Yes, in so much as, you know, the soberness, but the outline that she brought forth for the company. But no, in so much as, you know, AMD is a very expensive stock. I mean, and, you know, it's interesting. We had this conversation on Fast Money last night. AMD is a little different than NVIDIA for a number of reasons. On a price to earnings metric, it's far more expensive. And on a price to sales, it's actually far more reasonable. One of the reasons I'm concerned about NVIDIA is that exact reason. But we'll talk about that when you talk about the trade. In terms of the SMH, and if we could do a real sort of a longer term chart, you go back a couple of years, and this is what concerns me. And we've mentioned this a number of times. You know, you look at those double tops, which, by the way, held up really well. I mean, that double top formation, we saw a sell-off in the SMH on the back of that. It wasn't until late December, I think on that Thursday, when you outlined a bullish trade in NVIDIA, that this thing went off to the races. So your eye can see those prior double tops. And then we went from basically 163, we exploded higher. If everything I think is going to happen happens, that sort of 163 level, which seems preposterous right now, I think it's sort of in the cards, Dan Nathan.
Yeah, and this leads me, you know, again to NVIDIA. So, like, I just think it's interesting that the stock is up nearly 5% today and AMD can't get out of its own way. So people are really focused on that event next week. And again, you know, one of the main reasons, and I've been, you know, I did options action on CNBC for 10 years from 2009 to 2019. And then I did In the Money with Fidelity. That was a product that was directly piped to their customers from 2000 to mid-2022. And, you know, I always talk about the uses of equity options, or, you know, for self-directed traders. And obviously there's yield enhancement. So the idea of like selling calls against your long stock, the idea of risk management. This is one that's really important to me. It could be stock replacement. It could be things like collars. We're going to talk about a collar. And then obviously it can just be like leverage, right? And picking a view like that kind of we talked about with the QQQ. Those are the three main reasons I think about it. But when I look at like an NVIDIA guy, let's look at this one here. And we don't have to get into all the other stuff here. This stock has gained $1 trillion in market cap in just 2 months. And if you look at this thing, it's obviously, you know, 500 to nearly 1,000 in a straight line. There's an event next week. We get it. There's a lot, going to be a lot of expectations into that, not too different than into their earnings event last month or so. But I get people asking me all the time, you know, how do I protect this? I want to stay long it. I don't want to sell it. I think it could go to 3,000. I don't know what the hell they think it, you know, it could go wherever. So I say to myself, okay, well, you can use options to kind of help, right? Like kind of keep in the game, but define your risk to the downside. But when you look at this and you look at that breakout level, you look at that 200-day moving average all the way down there at 500, the stock's at 905 or so. Look at that 50-day moving average down there. You know, like there are levels where this thing could go with it in an air pocket if investors kind of head for the door at the same time.
We saw it last week. Yeah. You know, I don't have the exact number in front of me, but they're probably anywhere from 50 to 65 companies on the planet that have a market cap of $250 billion, $250 billion. Yeah. That's the amount that NVIDIA basically from peak to trough last Friday lost, which if you, again, for context, you know, if you think about that, that only that many companies have that market cap, and within a few hours, yeah, you saw a company lose that. That to me is a warning sign without question. So if you're long the stock and have no worries in the world, then there's no reason to do this. If you're long the stock and say, you know what, if it gets to 1,000, I'm willing to pull the ripcord. I have protection to the downside. I think this is the exact trade you want to put on.
All right, so let's talk about it. Let's talk about a collar and what that is. And it's doing it against a long stock position. So let's say a 100-round lot, okay? That would be, if you're going to trade options against, you're going to be trading one option. So when I think about this with a stock around 905, let's say you're long and you want to actually have further participation to the upside, but you're willing to give up some of that potential upside for some protection to the downside. That's where a collar would come into play. So let's just say stocks at 905 right here, and you want to look up an April expiration, sell one of the April 1,000 calls at about $37. You would use that $37 in proceeds that you're taking in to look down to the April 850 put. That would cost you about $37. That structure costs you nothing against your long stock position. You would have gains of up to $95 between 905 and 1,000. On April expiration, your stock would be called away up about 10% or so. But here's the kicker of this trade idea, which I actually think is makes it really attractive to some people who want to find risk to the downside. Look at that 850 put. Cost $37. So that's down $55, but you can sell a call for the same amount of premium up $95. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the options market is giving you an opportunity for protection much closer to where the stock is trading to where you would be called away on the upside. So the best case scenario, if you were to put this collar on at 905, you're called away on April expiration up $95. The worst case scenario is you have losses down to 850, but you're protected below that. Now, here's the deal. If the stock moves up towards that short 1,000 strike, you're going to have mark-to-market losses in that short call position. That 850 put is going to get much, much cheaper, right? So you're going to have losses against your long stock, but you will have the appreciation of the stock.
Right.
And then on April expiration, you can always make a decision if you want to stay long the stock. It's above 1,000. You could always cover it. And, you know, the best case scenario is the stock is up and both the call and the put expire worthless and you had that protection on.
This is a trade. This is a strategy. If you're concerned going into next week, yep, over the, this is, you say to yourself, you know what? I'm okay. If it gets to $1,000, I'm fine being called away, knowing that also I have protection to the downside if something obviously on the flip side of the equation were to happen, if the stock were to crater from here. So this is sort of helps you sleep well at night. Now, quite frankly, if we're being honest, which we are, just being long the stock outright, Friday notwithstanding, yep, has helped you sleep a great deal. But, you know, when I see the price action that we've seen over the last couple sessions, this to me is a great way to sort of, again, say, you know what, $1,000, I'm happy, yep, pull the ripcord, I have downside protection, I'm okay for the next few, however many trading sessions. I think it's a great strategy.
All right, let's be honest. The last nice thing I had to say about the stock was Jan 5th, and you just mentioned it. It was trading at $490. I was, went on CNBC's Fast Money, and we talked about buying a call to play for a breakout. Here we are. We're talking about a 130 call sale guy. I mean, just think about that. Okay. Real quickly, I just want to hit this one, Intel. Okay. So this stock was trading at $50 in late January when they reported their Q4 results, guy. It had a very bad quarter, a very bad guide. The stock sold off, 12% or so. It's basically been basing. It's just been left for dead. It's down about 10% on the year here. And I was thinking about, I wanted to get your quick thoughts. We're not going to detail too much of a trade idea, but like there's something sticking out. If you were trying to play for a gap fill back to 50, there's a couple ways to play. Is this at all interesting to you? Do you like the idea of playing a laggard when we have some of these names performing so well at this point?
It's interesting in so much as people, as they continue to get pushed out the valuation curve and the risk curve, and they try to find things that actually they can wrap their head around in terms of valuation. Intel is one of those names. Now, Intel has flawed, and there's a reason why it trades at a trough valuation and obviously at a much different valuation than its peers. I get it. However, we have seemingly entered this period of time where old tech is sort of de rigueur, as the French say. So if you look at Oracle, I believe making all-time highs.
Let's pull
that one up. If you pull up IBM as well.
And Dell,
you'll see a few to a handful of names that have actually, from nowhere, have made these moves. So a lot of people say, what's the next one? And maybe there's a chance that Intel is that next one.
Yeah. And again, listen, we have no idea whether this, euphoria in around generative AI is going to continue throughout the market here. If it does continue, they're going to come for some of these other names. They came for Micron. They came for Qualcomm. They came, Taiwan Semi, that sort of thing. So when I look at this and I say to myself on the Intel, let's go back to this one for a second. And I say, okay, maybe it catches a bid. Maybe it closes in that gap. Maybe it gets back towards 50 over the next month or so. It's not a high conviction trade idea, but maybe you look at April expiration. The stock is just below $45. You look at that kind of 45 call. It's just over $2. Okay. Not a great, paying $2 for that. You can do the math. That's a little over 4% or so, guys. So that's where you're breaking. Let's just say you paid $2 for the 45 call in April. You need that stock to be $47, just to break even on April expiration. The 45-50 call spread, maybe that costs you $1.50. You're risking $1.50 for a $46.5 break even, and maybe you make $3.50, so three times the premium if you got back to 50. I don't know. What do you think of the risk reward? I just wanted to bring it up a little bit.
Anytime you get 3, 3.5, 4 to 1 risk reward and something like this, I think it makes sense. But to your point, there's a reason why Intel is not participated at all. I think for some people, they say, this is going to be the next one. So maybe that strategy makes sense. Other people say there's a reason why it's still sort of nowhere, no man's land. And I'm going to sort of stay away from it. So I totally get, I get both sides of that equation without question.
All right. Let's
take a look at the gold
chart. Something that's near and dear to your heart. Gold.
It's interesting. And obviously, we're seeing a little bit of a sell-off today for a myriad of different reasons, many of which we talked about at the beginning of the show in terms of yields. But let's pull up a gold chart real quick, because what I've said for a while is it hangs in there. It's hanging around. And there was actually a note out today. Well, maybe we can put it in the show notes if I can find it, talking about how, the gold trade has gotten a little hyperbolic, which I find fascinating because there's nothing hyperbolic about it. But yet here we are. I still think gold works for a myriad of different ways. And I think if you're bullish in the underlying commodity like I am, and I think a lot of people found themselves, I think there's something to do in terms of the GDX. And, we can outline some of my ideas here real quick, Dan, the reasons why, I'm bullish in the gold miners. Now, for you folks playing our home game, the GDX, I think Newmont Mining is about 13%. That's NEM. Barrick Gold, which comes out GOLD, is probably close to 9%. Agnico Eagle Mines, which is the A in my clam trade for you folks playing our home game, is 8%. So you get it. The downtrend is in place without question. And obviously, gold mining stocks have tremendously underperformed both the market and the underlying commodity. So I totally get it. But I look at this and I say to myself, again, put up the reasons why. There are a number of reasons to be bullish here. That underperformance is one. I do think you're going to play catch up. The underlying commodity is breaking out. I think we both agree on that. And to a certain extent, it is a hedge against stock market volatility, which, as we talked about earlier, is manifesting itself around the edges. And we saw the VIX trade up, obviously, late last week, early this week. So for those reasons and a few others, I like the gold miners here in the form of the GDX, Dan.
Well, if you're looking to play for a catch-up trade a little bit, let's throw the one-year chart up there for a second. You know, this is one where I'm probably more inclined to kind of express a bullish view in the options market, thinking about those sorts of levels, thinking about that sort of downtrend and defining my risk a little bit. So when the GDX today was trading at 29.55, I could look out to April expiration. I could think about a call spread. So what am I doing? I'm buying a near-the-money call, and I'm selling a further out-of-the-money call. This is the 30-34 call spread. I'm paying about 90 cents for that, buying one of the April 30 calls at about $1.10, selling one of the April 34 calls at about 20 cents. So again, that costs me 90 cents. That is my max risk on this trade. I have profits up to 310 between 30.90 and 34, the max gain of 310 above that. And I have losses of up to 90 cents between 30 and 30.90 with a max loss of 90 cents below 30. And again, this trade idea, it risks about 3% of the ETF price. I have a break even up about 4.5%, and I have a max gain of about 10% of the GDX if it's up, you know, about 15% or so in a little more than a month. I like the idea of capping my risk at about 3% because, again, this ETF just ran in a straight line, okay? The last point I'll make is when we talk about long premium directional trade ideas on Market Call, we'd like to use a mental stop of about 50% of the premium that we spent. So if the GDX goes sideways or goes down, and at some point in the not so distant future, this call spread that costs 90 is about 50 or 45 cents, I'm going to look to cut my losses and move on. I do not like to see long premium directional trades go to zero. That's one way to little your portfolio with just drags on the portfolio here, rather than the idea of getting defined risk, high risk reward sort of trade ideas. So again, if you agree with Guy and you think that GDX can play a little catch up, defining your risk, looking at April expiration and call spreads makes sense to me.
We went through a lot of trade ideas. Pull up this slide. If you want your trade ideas in your inbox, sign up today, riskreversal.com, and they will find their way in to your inbox.
You just put your email in there and you're going to get more detail, all the charts that we're looking at, and actually a bit more of the breakdown of the trade ideas. So go to riskreversal.com, sign up for them. You'll have them there. Guy, we covered a lot of ground
today. We did. That was a fun show. Thank you, everyone, for joining. I hope you enjoyed the trade ideas. I know we did. Tomorrow, we'll be back on Market Call. It's Wednesday, which means Elizabeth Young, I believe, EY of SoFi, will be joining us.
All right. Can't wait.